Clips Nation, welcome to another edition of the Lob the Jam, the podcast. I am your host, Patrick Zajac, ready to discuss the first quarter of the NBA season for your Clippers. So far, so good, at least in terms of overall record. Maybe not so much in the last week or so as the team struggled on its most recent road trip and dropped a result to the Indiana Pacers just most recently. But first and foremost, like I said, looking back on the first quarter of the season, and joining me for this week's episode are Clips Nation staff writers Robert and Aditya. Robert, Aditya, how are you guys doing today?
Great.
Pretty good. How about you, Pat?
Doing fantastic, despite, you know, the mediocre sports day for me, most notably the Clippers dropping their second game of the season to the Indiana Pacers. Have played 22 games this season, and it's been one of the big talking points so far for this Clippers team, especially, you know, the last week and a half or so. It kind of looks like fatigue has sort of set in as the Clippers have dropped a lot of games. You can argue that they shouldn't have. But as it stands now, record standing at 16-6, two games back of the Western Conference leading Golden State Warriors, who we certainly will get to at the end of this episode in our preview and look ahead to the week, most notably that Wednesday night matchup between the Warriors and Clippers. Clippers right now holding the number three seed, one game behind the San Antonio Spurs for that coveted two seed, albeit two games in the loss column, which is the most important part, and a comfortable two game ahead of the Houston Rockets, who are in the four seed. But I want to start with kind of your guys' general thoughts, any takeaway that you want to discuss as we look back on the quarter of the season. Starting with you, Robert, what's kind of your one big takeaway, one big thought from the first quarter of the season?
I guess my big takeaway would be that the Clippers are really good. I think everybody kind of knew that going into this season, but people forgot how good Blake Griffin can be. And I think, you know, despite the ups and downs, especially on that road trip, I think the Clippers reminded everybody that their ceiling, when healthy and all their whole team is clicking, is better than anybody in the NBA outside of the Warriors. And I would put them above the Cavs, to be quite honest, because I like their top three better than the Cavs' top three. But yeah, I think, you know, while they've slipped a little bit, they showed that they can be a really, really great team, not just good, but a great team when they're clicking. And that's really what we needed to see. You know, they don't need to be consistent with it, at least not right now, but just the fact that they flashed that kind of upside is important. So I think that's my takeaway.
Yeah, certainly the hot start the team was off to, and I think they started 14-2, were the one seed for the first week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks of the season before, you know, their play kind of tapered off. And we've mentioned on this show, does that have to do with fatigue or just kind of that's how we see the rest of the season going, this team kind of winning and losing games at the rate that they have been lately? What about you, Aditya? What's your one big takeaway or one big thought from this first quarter of the season?
Yeah, I would agree with Robert for the most part, although I'm still not convinced about the Cavs. Oh, I could be convinced that they're not as good as the Clippers, but I think they're still better than the Clippers head-to-head. But other than that, I think the one big takeaway so far has to be the defense. We thought the defense would be good, at least the starters. We weren't sure about the bench. The bench played well for the first, at least for the first 10 games or so. They've slipped since then, but they've been better than we expected, at least. And the starters have been absolutely phenomenal. Luke Richard and Bob Mute, fantastic defender. Like, I don't think people realized how good they'd be defensively. Like, right now, I think they're back in first place league-wide, and it's by a sizable margin, at least, especially with the way the Hawks are slipping.
Yeah, and I'm going to kind of bench off of what you guys have said, most notably you, Aditya, and talking about the defense, especially in the beginning part of the season. I think the way the Clippers played team defense that first month and a half of the season is a level of defense that we haven't really seen the Clippers play in the last, you know, pretty much the entire Doc Rivers era. We've seen it flashes, you know, a few possessions, a few quarters, a few games in a row here and there over the years, but I think never to the extent that we saw them play it early on this season. And one person that you mentioned that I want to talk about more as sort of my big takeaway, my big thought from this first quarter of the season, has been the play of Luke Mbah-Amute, specifically on the defensive end. And even offensively, he's kind of come around in terms of knowing when to roll to the rim and cut off of Chris Paul pick and rolls, being at least a average 3-point shooter, you know, posting up in that corner. But his play defensively has been far beyond, I think, what any of us could have ever imagined, ever expected, especially seeing Mbah Mute last season. Don't get me wrong, was, you know, he performed admirably starting at the three alongside the core four in the starting lineup last year. But how, where he's taken his game defensively to now being regarded as one of the best, if not the best, I'm not going to give him the best perimeter defender in the league, but certainly up there in the top five conversation, perimeter defender in the league or wing defender. I think if his play defensively continues, that's something that you can lean on in the playoffs, because we know, especially with the great teams in the NBA, you know, we're talking about the Cavs, who have LeBron James, the Warriors, Kevin Durant, and the Warriors, again, who we'll get to, have a whole host of other problems that the Clippers will have to deal with starting Wednesday night. But with Kevin Durant there, you have Kawhi Leonard on the Spurs. So all the theoretical championship contenders in the NBA, all of them have fantastic wings at their disposal, all-star wings, you know, best cream of the crop in the NBA. And if Luka Mbah-Mute can continue his play defensively in shutting down these players, we've seen it in stretches, him shutting down Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James, Paul George tonight to an extent, although the Pacers did pull out the victory. But his play, Luka Mbah-Mute's play, gives me more optimism for when playoff time comes around. Obviously, still three quarters of the way to go, but his play defensively kind of gives me a renewed sense of optimism going into the season. So I wouldn't say, of course, he's the MVP of the Clippers for the first quarter of the season, but certainly my biggest surprise and kind of my biggest source of optimism for where the Clippers stand right now. In terms of an MVP, I don't know. I think we might be unanimous on this one. My MVP of the first quarter of the season, it's got to be Chris Paul. He's the straw that stirs the drink for the Clippers, makes them go offensively and defensively, and he's the unquestioned leader. And the stats have been there to back it up. I think currently has the third or fourth highest PER in the league. At one point was ranked number one. But what about you guys in terms of a MVP of the first quarter? Starting with you, Adithya.
That's tough. I guess I would go with Chris Paul, although it feels like, you know, he's been down lately. I think it's hard for me to think, just because like the recency bias, I'm trying to think over the whole 20 games, like the guys have had their ups and downs. It's like 20 games already kind of a long span of time.
Yeah. What about you, Robert, for MVP of the first quarter?
I would agree. I think it's Chris Paul. He's still averaging per 36 minutes career highs in rebounding, 3-point attempts and makes a game, and steals per game, all pretty important categories. And I think the real barometer is that, you know, usually your most important players, the way the wind blows. And as Adithya just said, the recent slide corresponded primarily with really poor play, like shockingly poor play from Chris Paul. And while the entire team played poorly during that stretch, it was really the most surprising person to see play poorly on the Clippers is Chris Paul. You know, there are games where you're like, oh, Blake Griffin might have a tough matchup, or, you know, he's not looking great tonight. Like, you never really expect to say that about Chris Paul. And I think that's why he has to be, you know, the Clippers MVP. At one point, you know, 7 or 8 games ago, he was the NBA MVP. Most people thought he was the MVP of the entire season so far. So, yeah, I'd still say it's him, just because he's clearly, you know, the Clippers blow the way he does, and I think that just means he's the best player.
Certainly they take after him, and when the Clippers were kind of mired in that 3-game losing streak just a week ago to at least inferior teams on paper, certainly, and shorthanded teams, it was Chris Paul who was struggling, you know, getting outplayed by Ish Smith and Rodney Stuckey. And so this team will go as Chris Paul goes. And so far, obviously, still early in the season, that game losing streak, hopefully a thing of the past, despite the loss to the Pacers here following up nice back-to-back victories. And if we look, I want to talk about, too, just the 3-point shooting of a couple of guys. J.J. Redick's 3-point shooting percentage right there at 46%, kind of where we expect, a little bit higher in years past, especially the career year that JJ had last year, but a very respectable three-point shooting percentage. Chris Paul, over just over 40%. If we round up, it's at 41%. And as you mentioned, a career high in three-point attempts. Chris Paul has actually attempted more three-pointers this season than J.J. Redick, 110 to 106. So that's surprising to see early on. And another guy who I mentioned earlier in the show and over in this podcast, Luke Mbah-Mute, shooting an even 40% from three-point range, albeit on just 35 attempts. But another added benefit of Mbah-Mute's kind of breakout season is that he's, at least for now, a viable threat in shooting the corner three. And I think that does wonders in terms of, you know, the Clippers' offensive spacing down the line. It's nice to see, especially, you know, considering Jamal Crawford has only shot 34% from three-point range, taking 86. I'm curious to see, what are your guys' thoughts on Jamal Crawford's play through the first quarter of the season? Is he still a possible trade candidate for this team? Do you guys see him keeping sort of the same role throughout the rest of the season? Does Doc, like I said, consider trading him? In my mind, certainly has struggled mightily at times in this first quarter of the season. The jury's still kind of out for me on what to do with Jamal Crawford. What about you guys? Robert, what do you think about Jamal Crawford?
Well, this is pretty funny. I think Aditya actually is the one who said that Jamal Crawford is one of Doc Rivers' sons on the team, along with Paul Pierce, and omitting Austin Rivers. I would agree with that. I think Jamal Crawford is one of the last guys we can expect to be traded, which I think is not a good thing. I think that people are oftentimes too hard on Jamal Crawford. And, you know, some of it is just personal style of play. I honestly like the way he plays, but this year he's really been no worse than last year. When you look at his numbers, they're almost identical. His field goal percentage and three-point percentage are almost exactly the same. The only thing is he's getting to the line a little bit less, and his rebounds is down a tiny amount, but he's basically the same player as last year. He's scoring less per 36 minutes, but, I mean, he is who he is, which is, you know, when he's hot, he can carry you, and when he's not, he's a net minus. I think that the Clippers wouldn't really get much from him because the only teams that would want him are other contending teams, and those aren't usually teams that want to give up other pieces that could help contenders. I don't really know what the trade would be. I'd need to do more in-depth looks into that. I mean, there's always been the Rudy Gay trade that's been bandied around, but I don't really know why the Kings would make that trade now, because Jamal has, you know, a couple years left on his deal. The Kings don't really want 37-year-old players. So should he be traded? Maybe. I don't think he's a great fit with Felton or Rivers, but he's still valuable to the Clippers. They shouldn't just give him away. And, you know, he still has a role to play on this team, I think. I mean, I think the bigger issue isn't with him. It's with Doc just playing him too many minutes, averaging 25 a game, which on a team that's as stacked as the Clippers is just too many. You know, there are some nights where you can play him 30 if he's hot, but there are other nights where if he's not looking good, you just can't play him more than like 10 to 12 minutes. You have guys in Felton and Rivers, and to a lesser extent, you know, even Wes Johnson a little bit, if you give him small forward minutes, you can take some of those minutes away, who are better, well-rounded players. So, I mean, I think Doc should just play him less, but I think he's still valuable to the Clippers because he's the best pure shot creator on the entire team still. I'd still trust him to get a shot off more than Chris Paul. Obviously, I'd rather have the ball in Chris Paul's hands. But, I think he has a role to play. I think his minutes should go down, and I do not think Doc Rivers is trading him. So, long-winded answer to a short question.
I agree in that sense. I don't think that they will, and return wouldn't be significant. As you mentioned, the kind of around the rumor mill that I've been reading and hearing about has been, you know, packaging Jamal Crawford with a first-round pick. But again, what kind of return does that realistically get you? Does it get you someone who would fit in on this team better than what Jamal Crawford already is and does for this team, and kind of that veteran leadership role that he plays on this team? What about you, Aditya? Where do you stand on the Jamal Crawford debate?
I'm with Robert, actually. You know, I was a little bit lower on Jamal coming into the year. I thought he'd fall off a little bit more. And, you know, I thought Austin would be better. But I think Jamal is still proving his value, like, not only with his shot-making and creating for himself ability, but also just as a secondary ball handler and distributor. And I think he's been better than I expected. You know, he still has these stretches where it's frustrating to watch. And he might shoot the Clippers out of games at times. I think the Detroit game was one example of that, where, you know, he took a lot of bad shots down the stretch. But I haven't minded the rotation decision with Jamal for the most part. I think I agree with Rob where the minutes could be cut down some more, especially for guys like Wes Johnson, who as is well known, I'm a fan of. But I think that I've been fine, I think, with the decision, like playing with the starters versus playing Mbah Moute. Like tonight, I think he managed that pretty well, even though Thad Young burned him a couple of times. And yeah, I think I'm okay with him for the most part. I think that he's proven that he has a key role on this team still, for better or for worse. And I think that there's not really anyone better that they're going to get where the continuity, and I think that would be too much for another player to offset in a trade. And, you know, I think, honestly, I'd rather trade Austin than him if it came to that.
It's just tough, especially with the way that the team has started and has shown just how good they can be in certain games and certain stretches of play, just how dominant this team has shown it can be. And if that continues, if the Clippers, you know, are hanging around a 2 or 3 seed for the entire season right there with the Spurs and trailing the Warriors all year, I just don't see them realistically making a move, because you would fear, in Doc Rivers' situation, you would fear breaking up that continuity, that chemistry, so to speak, that you've worked this long to build. You know, for the most part, with the exception of a few rotating parts at the end of the bench year in and year out for the Clippers, it's been the core four plus Jamal Crawford and Austin Rivers pretty much the last few years, and you've had all this time playing together, and now I think the Clippers are finally reaping the rewards of all of that. So I don't think now would be the right time to trade anyone, for that matter, if this play continues. You know, everyone in the national media before this season, and even now to an extent, Zach Lowe actually just had an article on ESPN pretty much reiterating the stance that this is a make or break year for these Clippers as it stands, with Blake Griffin and Chris Paul having, you know, chances to opt out of their contracts after the year. And that's another conversation for another day. But at the same time, again, that I think that goes into that Jamal Crawford discussion, where I don't think anything's going to happen as long as the Clippers keep playing the way they do and staying at the top of the Western Conference, most specifically in those top three. I think you got to like your chances with the way this team is constructed now to take on the Spurs and the Warriors when it gets into April and May and June. Looking now back to our first quarter of the season discussion, best game of the season for any reason, whether it was a big win, most exciting game to watch, where we saw the Clippers at their best, I kind of picked out two. One of them being recently the game at Cleveland on December 1st, following a 3-game losing streak. That has to be my vote for best game of the year, just because the Clippers won, played phenomenally from start to finish, and bounced back from just a dreadful 3-game losing streak. Think 3 games that they shouldn't have lost. I'll give them that first game against Detroit. Those kinds of losses happen. You run into a hot shooting team. Sometimes you lose those games on the road, but the games against a shorthanded Pacers team without Paul George last week in Indiana, scoring only 70 points, which I learned during today's broadcast was the lowest by any Doc Rivers coach team, Celtics or Clippers, in his coaching career, which is just, you know, unfathomable to think about. And then just the cherry on top of that losing streak, double overtime to the Brooklyn Nets, a game where the Clippers had a 13-point lead going into the fourth quarter. That was just unbelievable in its own right. And all the chances that the Clippers had to put that game away, and it was just maddening to watch. So that's why I have that Cleveland game following that 3-game losing streak as my best game of the first quarter, because the Clippers put it together, ended that losing streak, and on a national stage with that game on being on TNT kind of showed the entire country what this team is capable of when they're completely motivated, completely healthy, and completely locked in as a unit compared to the, you know, the previous three games where they were kind of checked out and didn't have that same energy. But what about you guys for best game of the first quarter?
I was also between two games, actually. I think the Cleveland game is definitely a contender for it. I was strongly considering it for all the reasons you mentioned. Cleveland's a really good team. I think Cleveland was really off that night more than – the Clippers played very well, but that kind of colors it a little bit in my mind. So I'm going to go back in just terms of pure playing. I think the best overall felt might have been that Wednesday, November 9th game, which was – at home against Portland, which is, I wouldn't say they're like our true rival of the Clippers, but, you know, they lost the playoff series to them last year, and Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum are always very competitive with the Clippers guards and stuff, and they just waxed them at home. They won by 31 points. They limited a team powered by those two guys who are terrific offensive players, just 80 points. Blake Griffin looked amazing. Chris Paul was great. You know, it was just a terrifically played game. I think just in terms of quality, it might be the best they've played this year. That or actually the game right before where they also destroyed the Pistons. I chose Portland because I think they're a little bit of a better team and the Pistons didn't have Reggie Jackson at the time. But either of those two games, really, they just manhandled pretty good teams and just they looked amazing. They looked like one of the two best teams in the league, you know, along with the Warriors or Cavs. And, you know, the Cavs game, they did play really well. That's a good choice. But if you want just best game, I think it has to be that Portland game.
Yeah, certainly no argument with you on that one. And there's been a lot of stretches, I think, that we can point to where the Clippers have legitimately looked like the best team in the NBA. What about you, Aditya? What was your high point of this first quarter of the season?
Well, I think I'd have both the Cavs and the Blazers games in my top three. Like in the Blazers game, they're up at 48 at one point. You know, I was I was hoping that they would go for a 50 piece there, but that didn't come through. The other one that I was thinking, I guess, just to complete the trio, the Spurs game back in early November. While it wasn't maybe as exciting as the other two, and you know, I think a lot of us expected that they'd be better than the Spurs, but it was still a very validating win, and it was still a very good sign early in the year that we weren't quite sure what level this team was. Was it, you know, the same kind of level they'd been last few years or maybe at another level altogether? And that's one of the games that, you know, really suggests, okay, there might be something different about this team, even though that they've stayed the same for the most part this summer.
And for me personally, at least, that Spurs game was pretty much the first time this season where I sort of said to myself, this Clippers team looks different, feels different. I mean, they legit felt after that game to me like a legitimate championship contender. It was the second night of a back-to-back after the Clippers just got off of a hard-fought win in Memphis the night before. And I penciled it in as more of a schedule loss. The second night of a back-to-back, you're in San Antonio, just came off, you know, the grit and grind effort against the Memphis Grizzlies. I think Clippers teams in years past would have, you know, taken the night off, so to speak, in the sense that they wouldn't come out as energized, but quite the opposite. The team came out full of energy, hustling to every loose ball, grabbing what seemed every single rebound in that game and just absolutely blitzed the Spurs in their own building. And I think that kind of showed me and showed a lot of Clippers fans where this team can truly be. It's something that we've all believed that they can play this sort of level, this sort of high level, and be a legitimate championship contender. But that game for me was at least the game where I said to myself, like, this team could potentially, you know, live up to the hype that they've had for the last, it seems, 4 or 5 years, at least internally. But now going to the low point of the season, I kind of lumped together both Pacers losses and maybe, you know, I'm kind of suffering from the latest setback, so to speak, this night, the Clippers losing at home to the Pacers and with the Pacers being at full strength for the first time all season, with Paul George there as well. But I don't know, especially that first Pacers loss after you drop a game against Detroit, that was kind of a ho-hum loss. You know, those kinds of losses happen. To lose to the Pacers in Indiana by 21 points, a team without Paul George, and just the way the team came out absolutely flat and with no energy after losing to that Detroit game, it was a really bad look, bad feeling. I was just dreading that loss all night. I mean, Lucas and I here at Clips Nation, we had our vent episode last week for this podcast, mm-hmm. and it was pretty much just hammering the team for their lack of energy, lack of focus on a night like that where it was a very easily winnable game. And those types of losses can hurt you down the road. We've already seen, you know, the Clippers now start to fall behind the Warriors and the Spurs in the West, three behind the Warriors in the loss column, two behind the Spurs. So it's those types of losses that are just maddening to me, where the team comes out with a lack of focus, lack of energy against a very winnable opponent, especially when, you know, you have at that time Cleveland and New Orleans in a back-to-back on the horizon, two very losable games that the Clippers eventually won, but those easy ones, so to speak, at least on paper, are the ones you got to have. So that's why that Pacers loss is the low point of the season for me, even more so than that double overtime Nets loss. What do you guys think? Starting with you, Aditya, what do you think was the low point of this first quarter?
Definitely go with the Pacers game. That was definitely the worst. It just awful, awful basketball. Outside of that, I guess going outside of a losing streak, I mean, there aren't very many options outside of that three-game losing streak. But the OKC game, the first one, was maybe not the worst they've played, but it was by far like the most frustrating loss that they've had.
Robert, what about you for low point of the season?
I mean, yeah, it has to be that first Pacers game. It just has to be. It's some of the ugliest basketball game we've seen these Clippers play. Just to be a little bit contrarian, I'll talk for a bit about tonight's game, which I missed some of it because I had, you know, work and school stuff. But from what I saw and just looking at the box score, you know, it obviously wasn't as bad a loss. The Pacers only won by 9 and they had Paul George, but the Clippers were at home, so that's kind of rough. And I think just, you know, as we talked about earlier, one of the key reasons behind their stretch early in the season was the great play of the bench. And tonight, just when you look at them, their numbers aren't terrible, but the plus-minus stats are just horrible. Most Bates, minus 15 in 12 minutes. Rivers, minus 21 in 15. Felton, minus 17 in 14. And, you know, Paul Pierce, the legend Paul Pierce, a minus 7 in 8 minutes. But, I mean, I think, you know, the Clippers' greatness, their actual greatness, relies on their bench being, you know, not amazing, but on being good. And, you know, it's the one thing that could push them past a team like, you know, the Warriors, the Cavs. And nights like tonight make you really doubt that the start of the season was for real, because the defense wasn't that great. They were getting lit up by, you know, over-the-hill guys like Rodney Stuckey and C.J. Miles. And, you know, their shots weren't falling from the outside. Crawford 0 for 3 from 3. Felton 0 for 2. Austin Rivers 0 for 1. Pierce 0 for 1. And, you know, if their threes aren't falling and their defense isn't being played well, they're going to bleed points. It's not like it's a, you know, big lineup that can rebound or, you know, dominate the glass or the paint. It's a very perimeter reliant bench, and, you know, on nights like tonight, it just looks grim against the team, you know, especially teams like the Warriors and Cavs that stagger a lot. And we'll have to talk about that for the preview against the Warriors game. But I mean, obviously that first Pacers loss was the worst, but tonight might honestly be more grim just in terms of long-term outlook on the season.
Yeah. And the reason why tonight, and I kind of lumped both Pacers losses into the low point of the year, the reason why tonight stung, at least for me, was that you expect that coming off a 21-point loss just a week ago to this very same team on the road, albeit, and then you're coming off two huge wins, arguably the biggest win of the year at Cleveland, following that up with a great win at New Orleans, and Anthony Davis and Drew Holiday, back-to-back games, you take care of business there. You return home after a long six-game road trip. that 21-point loss is fresh on your mind. And I expected the Clippers, or, I mean, wishfully expected them to absolutely blitz the Pacers and coast, just, you know, looking back a week ago, hoping that they wanted some sort of revenge at the expense of the Pacers. And it happened in the early portion, in the first quarter. They looked great. At one point, I think the Clippers were up 25-10 with the starting unit playing fantastic. And then as the bench went in, the lead went away. Doc put the starters back in, you know, typical of his rotation early on in the second quarter. But by then it was, you know, a 6-point game or somewhere around there. And eventually the lead just got away from them. Third quarter was an absolute travesty right from the get-go. I think the Pacers went on a 12-0 run to start that quarter and eventually took a 14-point lead at the third. And the Clippers, you know, give them credit for battling in that fourth quarter, eventually, you know, making a 4-point game, I think, in the last 2 minutes. But at no point did you feel that they could complete the comeback just with how they were playing defensively and turning the ball over offensively. So that's why that Pacers loss tonight, after the worst Pacers loss the week before, stings a lot for me, just because as the fans' perspective, I wanted that revenge win to kind of prove to everyone that that loss was, you know, doesn't happen often with this current iteration of the Clippers. But not to be, it happened. It was part of a 3-3, 6-game road trip. And I want to discuss that road trip briefly before we move on and look ahead to this week, specifically to the big game on December 7th against the Warriors at Staples Center. 3-3 on their so far season-long 6-game road trip. Dallas, Cleveland, and New Orleans, losses that we've talked about, the three in a row to Detroit, Indiana, and double OT to Brooklyn. What do you guys kind of make of that 6-game road trip? Because in this road trip, we kind of saw the Clippers, at least in the media, fall from best team in the NBA to, oh, it's the same old Clippers all over again. So kind of two very drastic changes in views on this Clippers team. Do we blame it on, you know, just the fact that the schedule caught up to them, in the sense that the Clippers have played the most games in the NBA, haven't had 2 days off in between games since opening night, pretty much, and now finally do after this Indiana game before playing the Warriors? But what do you guys kind of make of that 3-3 road trip? Starting with you, Aditya, what do you think about the road trip?
Before that, I just wanted to go back to the revenge game thing, because there's something I was thinking about a couple of days too. I was thinking about this, like, barring there being some kind of personal animus, like a rivalry thing, or just having a lot of, you know, just on-court shenanigans, tempers, things like that between teams, I don't think that they're the kind of team, like, compared to the Warriors. Like, the Warriors are the perfect example of a team that is very, very revenge-minded. Like, I don't think the Clippers are that kind of team. I don't think that's, like, a good or a bad thing, but for better or worse, like, they're not the kind of team that takes just the losing the game alone that personally. Like, they're more self-motivated, looking inwards. Like, there's nothing, when they play this Pacers team again, I don't think that they're thinking, oh, we played this team before, just another game against this team. So unless that there's some personal incident, like, you know, there are rivalries that they have, like, because they have a lot of rivals. But if there isn't anything like that driving them, they're not the kind of team that seems out for revenge.
Yeah, I mean, I just wish that at times, we've seen when this team is properly motivated and fully focused, as they were against Cleveland following that 3-game losing streak. I think certainly those losses were on their minds going into that game, which is why they got off to such the hot start and kept it throughout that ball game, especially being on the national stage. And it's something that I think I've kind of noticed the last couple of years with this team. When this team is, you know, so to speak, has a fire lit under their behinds, that they play their best basketball. So I guess I think that's why I was not expecting, but hoping for that kind of game tonight, just because the loss was more, you know, so fresh on their minds, and it was a 21-point drubbing, and a loss that they really shouldn't have. So I do understand, you know, obviously them not seeing it as sort of that revenge game, especially because, you know, it's not a rivalry game, so to speak. It's not a Warriors game. It's not a Blazers game. It's not a Grizzlies game for this team. But at the same time, I just wish, especially I think more so from my inner fan's perspective, I just wanted that victory tonight more so than I would have had they not lost by 21. But it was a tough road trip, 3-3. I kind of blame it more on fatigue and just general scheduling. I think, especially with the Nets loss, we saw the Clippers rest Blake Griffin. Obviously, I don't think that they should have lost the Nets even without Blake Griffin. I think their talent is far superior to anything that the Nets have on their roster. But I blame it on the scheduling, that road trip, fatigue kind of catching up to the team. And I hope that the 2 days off here before the Warriors game pays off for them in a big way. What about you, Robert? What do you make of the road trip?
It's interesting. I mean, I think the biggest takeaway really was, as you mentioned, you know, more the media narrative about the same old Clippers. I find that to be much more interesting than just the games themselves, which, as you said, Detroit and Brooklyn in particular seemed like losses that come from fatigue. You know, Detroit, they got hot. They were making tough shots. Brooklyn, Sean Kilpatrick lit the Clippers up, and they just looked tired. Indiana, you know, both losses kind of were the only games that kind of disheartened me. The Brooklyn game was just very weird. And I think the national narrative that the Clippers are the same old Clippers is true and not true. I think there's a lot of nuance there that is really hard to talk about. You know, it's hard for us to talk about, too, just because we're biased. But I think the media is biased in you know, more the other way, in that they don't really see the subtle differences in the teams between, you know, this year and years past. I think this team is better than previous years, if nothing else, and just still being healthy with, you know, Blake, DJ, an improved DJ from, you know, early Doc Rivers years, and somewhat improved Blake Griffin, and a still potent Chris Paul. I think just having those guys means they're a somewhat different team as long as they're healthy. But I think that at the same time, they really miss a chance to prove themselves to be, you know, a team that doesn't take losing 3 games in a row. I doubt the Warriors, for example, you know, it's hard to just compare them to the Warriors, but I'd be shocked if the Warriors at any point this season lost 3 games in a row unless they have a rash of injuries. And I think the Clippers really could have proven, you know, especially that Indiana or the Brooklyn game, you know, if they'd come out strong and won either of those, it would have been a bit of a different story. But I don't think, I wasn't in a huge rush. You know, I wrote a post that was kind of angry, but at the end, you know, when you look back at their overall record and their overall performances this year, you know, heightened by that those Cleveland and New Orleans for, you know, games shortly thereafter, this team is really good. And I think, you know, jumping the gun to say they're the same is incorrect. But it certainly was disappointing on the whole for me. I mean, the Cleveland game was a good win. The other two wins were wins they should have won, I think. You know, New Orleans was solid too on back-to-back. New Orleans is solid now with Jrue Holiday. But it was overall disheartening. I wouldn't say it was, like, disastrous, like some media people have, you know, claimed it as. But it certainly wasn't the result I wanted to see. So
yeah, I mean, yeah. It's hard to call any loss, you know, in early December or late November at the time of an NBA regular season disastrous. Certainly disheartening, you know, the night of and a few days after, just because as fans, it's natural to feel that way. We're coming down, you know, off the lowest of lows and the highest of highs, it feels sometimes. But looking ahead to the Warriors, Wednesday, December 7th, Clippers finally have 2 days off between games, something that they haven't had since the first week of the season. So certainly I think the rest helps. And I'm going to start with you, Aditya, on your thoughts of this Warriors game. Can and will the Clippers win this one at home against the best team in the NBA?
Can they? Absolutely. You know, I don't think effort's a question with these games. Like, if you look at last November, where the Clippers slept walk through most of the first month, the two games where they got up, like, probably their best 2 games of the year up to that point in the first few weeks, both of those Warriors games, even though they ended up losing both. So I don't have any concern about them doing the same thing on Wednesday. Although the concern I do have is, even though that we'll probably get an A-level effort and intensity from them, we're also going to see that same level from the Warriors. as good as they are, you know, they take plays off, like we've seen it, especially on the defensive end. But against the good teams, like the Clippers, like most teams really, like they will show up, they show up to play. And, you know, they have whatever internal pettiness, just competitive spirit, rivalry, all that is there. You know, I'm sure that they'll be thinking about how people are talking about the Clippers as the best team in the league for the first week or two. That's not going away from the back of their mind. And more importantly, just like Cleveland for the Clippers, this is going to be a statement game for the Warriors. It's their first huge foe since opening night where they got blasted by San Antonio. So it's going to be a very, very good game, hopefully, as long as the Clippers are able to shoot it well and the Warriors don't just run them out of the building or something. Like, I have a feeling in the back of my head that the Warriors will beat them by 20 or so. And I don't think that's going to be reflective of the level between the two teams, but I do feel like this game is one that may not turn out as well for the Clippers as you might hope.
I'm hopeful. I'm optimistic. And I think this game certainly means more to the Clippers than it does to the Warriors, at least early on. Because if this Clippers team is going to accomplish what they want to accomplish, and that's conference finals berth at worst, I mean, and that's for us fans and the national media too. We need to see this team make it to a conference finals. Obviously, the players have aspirations of winning a championship or at least being contenders, being in that conversation. If you want to be in that conversation, it starts with this Wednesday night's game. And I think this Clippers team needs that belief, that sort, that essentially they can beat this team. And that is why I think it's early December. It's going to be game 23 of 82. So in the grand scheme of things, in the marathon of the season, doesn't mean much. But I think for this Clippers team, they need this win. They need to believe that they can beat the Warriors. They need to prove to everyone in the country that they can beat the Warriors. And I think this team they certainly can do it. Whether or not they will, I don't know, just because I don't know how well they match up with the Warriors. The play of Mbamute defensively gives me some hope in that hopefully he can shut down Kevin Durant for stretches and force Klay Thompson and Steph Curry to knock down shots. Like, that's been difficult for them their entire careers. But if you can take out one, have Chris Paul shut down Steph Curry for stretches and take your chances with Klay Thompson, Draymond, it's just a murderer's row on this Warriors team. I'd like to think the Clippers can eke out a win, especially because they're at home at Staples Center, and I think that would do wonders for their confidence moving forward and kind of speak to their mentality where they are right now as far as potentially being the best team in the NBA, and this game goes a long way towards that. What about you, Robert? What are your thoughts and sort of a preview for this Warriors game?
Couple things. First of all, I think the national narrative, either way, the Clippers are in a lose-lose. I think if they win, people just write it off as just one game. If they win, you know, that's what I mean. If they win, it would just be, you know, it's just one game. The Warriors were down, or the Clippers had a fluke shooting night, whatever it is. And if they lose, it'll be like, oh, the Warriors are better than the Clippers, yada, yada, yada. I think the national narrative, unless the Clippers really, really look fantastic and dismantle the Warriors, is going to be not rosy. And I think specifically, I would love to see a couple ways for Doc Rivers, if you're listening to this, anybody on the Clippers. I don't know if this is revolutionary. It probably isn't. But there are a couple things I'd like to see. Just the Clippers starting lineup, if they're playing against the Warriors' death unit with Iguodala in the game instead of a traditional center, Draymond at center. I would love to see Redick take Iguodala and put Luka Mbamute not on Kevin Durant, which might seem like the obvious choice. So obviously he'll get his tracks in him. I'd like to see him try to shut down Klay Thompson and stick DeAndre Jordan on Kevin Durant, you know, not for super long stretches, but just hope that his length and athleticism is able to keep up at some stretches. That could turn out really bad, but I'd be interested to see it just as an experiment. And similarly, if Jamal Crawford is playing, I'd like to see him guard Klay Thompson, which sounds like a huge mismatch, but one of Thompson's best you know, skills is that he's tall and that he can shoot over smaller defenders like Paul or Redick. And Crawford, whatever else he is tall. So sticking him on Thompson, hope he can stay attached, he might be able to contest, just purely contest, a little bit better than those other guys. Those are two kind of interesting things I think the Clippers could try. Again, I'm not really expecting a victory. I think the Warriors are going to come out with a vengeance. But I really would like to see Doc Rivers experiment a little bit in terms of interesting new lineups. Please play Wes Johnson instead of Paul Pierce. Just please. And, you know, just see what works, especially defensively. Because, you know, offensively, the Clippers are going to score points. It's defensively, how do you stop the Warriors from scoring? You know, they have two of the best shooters, two of the best scorers to ever play in the NBA, in Durant and Steph Curry. And I think you have to, you know, switch things up a little bit, whether it's putting a big on Durant or, you know, a small guy on Iguodala or a big on Iguodala. I think there are different things you can try. And I'm curious to see what Doc Rivers does. But I'm just excited. You know, win or lose, I think it's going to be interesting to watch. So, yeah.
Let me just add one thing in there. The way that the Warriors stagger their rotations, you know, they have Durant back in playing the four at the beginning of second quarter. So, Doc, please don't play Paul Pierce. It's going to be Paul Pierce at the four versus KD at the four. Like,
I'm going to have a bad time.
That's going to be a horrific time. And with Spates, and Spates in the middle. Like, I know Spates is, I mean, I'm sure he'll be hyped up for this game, but a Pierce-Spates front court is just asking for all sorts of bad things.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of narratives going on, a lot of potential different storylines coming out of it. But one thing that we all agree on, we all know for sure, it's going to be exciting. The game that we've looked forward to the most all season long, and I'm sure that every basketball fan will also be tuning in as well. Wednesday night, 7:30 on ESPN, so another nationally televised game for the Clippers to showcase to everyone why this season is different, that they should be considered championship contenders. I, for one, cannot wait. Looking ahead real briefly before we wrap things up, light week for the Clippers this week afterwards. You know, they just came off this loss at home against Indiana, but then Wednesday against Golden State, and then, believe it or not, another 2 days off for the Clippers after that Warriors game playing Saturday night against the New Orleans Pelicans, also at home at Staples Center, before coming back next week, Monday, to play Portland. We'll, of course, have the next episode before that game. So next episode, we're only going to have two games to talk about, so I'm sure we'll be breaking down that Warriors game and what we see at length in that one, and whether or not this team can compete with the Warriors in a potential playoff series. Still a long ways away. This game only a first taste of that potential matchup. So certainly can't wait for that one. Thank you guys, Aditya, Robert, for joining me on the Lob the Jam, the podcast. We'll be back again, as I said, next week, and hopefully potentially during the week with a special interview that Lucas Hahn and I, our editor at Clips Nation, have been working on. Again, don't want to reveal too much, still in the works. We're hoping to bring that to you as soon as possible. Robert, Aditya, thank you so much for joining me. And as always, go Clippers.
Bingo! JJ in the corner for three. Bingo! Two in a row.